The next day, his first object was to inquire what people said of Aladdin. And taking a walk through the town, he went to the most public and frequented places, where persons of the best distinction met to drink a certain warm liquor, which he had drunk often during his former visit. As soon as he had seated himself, he was presented with a cup of it, which he took. But listening at the same time to the discourse of the company on each side of him, he heard them talking of Aladdin's palace. When he had drunk off his liquor, he joined them, and taking this opportunity, inquired particularly of what palace they spoke with so much commendation.
"From whence come you?" said the person to whom he addressed himself. "You must certainly be a stranger not to have seen or heard talk of Prince Aladdin's palace. I do not say," continued the man, "that it is one of the wonders of the world, but that it is the only wonder of the world, since nothing so grand, rich, and magnificent was ever beheld. Go and see it, and then judge whether I have told you more than the truth."
"Forgive my ignorance," replied the African magician. "I arrived here but yesterday from the farthest part of Africa, where the fame of this palace had not reached when I came away. The business which brought me hither was so urgent that my sole object was to arrive as soon as I could, without stopping anywhere or making any acquaintance. But I will not fail to go and see it, if he will do me the favour to show me the way thither."
The person to whom the African magician addressed himself took a pleasure in showing him the way to Aladdin's palace, and he got up and went thither instantly. When he came to the palace and had examined it on all sides, he doubted not but that Aladdin had made use of the lamp to build it. Without attending to the inability of a poor tailor's son, he knew that none but the genies, the slaves of the lamp, could have performed such wonders. And piqued to the quick at Aladdin's happiness and splendour, he returned to the Khan where he lodged. The next point was to ascertain where the lamp was, whether Aladdin carried it about with him, or where he kept it, and this he was to discover by an operation of geomancy. As soon as he entered his lodging, he took his square box of sand, which he always carried with him when he travelled, and after he had performed some operations, he found that the lamp was in Aladdin's palace, and so great was his joy at the discovery that he could hardly contain himself.
"Well," said he, "I shall have the lamp, and I defy Aladdin to prevent my carrying it off, thus making him sink to his original meanness, from which he has taken so high a flight."
It was Aladdin's misfortune at that time to be absent in the chase for 8 days, and only 3 were expired, which the magician came to know. After he had performed the magical operation, he went to the superintendent of the Khan, entered into conversation with him on indifferent subjects, and among the rest told him he had been to see Aladdin's palace, and after exaggerating on all that he had seen most worthy of observation, added,
"But my curiosity leads me further, and I shall not be satisfied till I have seen the person to whom this wonderful edifice belongs."
"That will be no difficult matter," replied the master of the Khan. "There is not a day passes but he gives an opportunity when he is in town, but at present he has been gone these 3 days on a hunting match, which will last 8.
The magician wanted to know no more. He took his leave of the superintendent of the Khan, and returning to his own chamber, said to himself,
"This is an opportunity I ought by no means to neglect."
To that end he went to a coppersmith, and asked for 12 copper lamps. The master of the shop told him he had not so many by him, but if he would have patience till the next day, he would have them ready. The magician appointed his time, and desired him to take care that they should be handsome and well polished. After promising to pay him well, he returned to his inn. The next day the magician called for the 12 lamps, paid the man his full price, put them into a basket which he bought on purpose, and with the basket hanging on his arm went directly to Aladdin's palace. As he approached, beginning to cry,
"Who will change old lamps for new ones?"
As he went along, a crowd of children collected, who hooted and thought him, as did all who chanced to be passing by, a madman or a fool.
The African magician regarded not their scoffs, hootings, or all they could say to him, but still continued crying, "Who will change old lamps for new?" He repeated this so often, walking backward and forward in front of the palace, that the princess, who was then in the hall with the 24 windows, hearing a man cry something and not being able to distinguish his words owing to the hooting of the children, an increasing mob about him, sent one of her women slaves to know what he cried. The slave was not long before she returned, and ran into the hall, laughing so heartily that the princess could not forbear herself.
"Well, giggler," said the princess, "will you tell me what you laugh at?"
"Madame," answered the slave, laughing still, "who can forbear laughing to see a fool with a basket on his arm full of fine new lamps ask to change them for old ones?"
Another female slave, hearing this, said,
"Now you speak of lamps, I know not whether the princess may have observed it, but there is an old one upon a shelf in the princess's robing room. If the princess chooses, she may have the pleasure of trying, if this fool is so silly as to give a new lamp for an old one, without taking anything for the exchange."
The lamp this slave spoke of was the wonderful lamp which Aladdin had laid upon the shelf before he departed for the chase. This he had done several times before, but neither the princess, the slaves, nor the eunuchs had ever taken notice of it. At all other times, except when hunting, he carried it about his person. The princess, who knew not the value of this lamp, and the interest that Aladdin, not to mention herself, had to keep it safe, entered into the pleasantry, and commanded a eunuch to take it and make the exchange. The eunuch obeyed, went out of the hall, and no sooner got to the palace gates than he saw the African magician, called to him, and showing him the old lamp, said,
"Give me a new lamp for this."
The magician never doubted but this was the lamp he wanted. There could be no other such in the palace, where every utensil was gold or silver. He snatched it eagerly out of the eunuch's hand, and thrusting it as far as he could into his breast, offered him his basket, and bade him choose which he liked best. The eunuch picked out one, and carried it to the princess. But the exchange was no sooner made than the palace rang with the shouts of the children, deriding the magician's folly. The African magician gave everybody leave to laugh as much as they pleased. He stayed not long near the palace, but made the best of his way, without crying any longer, "New lamps for old ones!" His end was answered, and by his silence he got rid of the children and the mob.